Hello, I'm George Potter. Welcome to Gospel Tangents.
Christians and Jews have long searched for the real Mount Sinai. But is it the location discovered by Helena, the mother of Constantine in the 4th century AD? Most people think it's not. George Potter, an LDS researcher, has done a lot of research in the Middle East and thinks he may have stumbled upon the real Mount Sinai. We'll also talk about its ties to the Book of Mormon. Check out our conversation. Before you do that, I just want to make sure that, just want to remind everybody to share this video or the podcast with as many friends and family as you can. I know the more people that we can reach, the better it will be for everybody. In my own family, I know that I've had been able to share this with some people, and it's really helped them learn more about Mormon history, and so I hope it helps you guys too. Now back to our conversation. Well, welcome to Gospel Tangents. I'm really excited. I've been trying to get together with George Potter for about a year, it feels like.
Maybe longer.
You're going out of the country, and so I'm really pleased to get together. But why don't you introduce yourself to our audience?
Okay, I'm George Potter. I'm your garden variety member of the church, except for the fact that I've lived most of my life overseas. Got into archaeology when I was a missionary in Peru and Bolivia, and so I was at Lake Titicaca area, Tiwanaku, that area for part of my mission, and then I served 6 months in Cusco, which is the ancient capital of the Inca Empire, and that kind of got me interested in archaeology. Later came back after my mission, went to University of California, San Diego. Then I went to Berkeley for my master's degree, and then started a career as a CPA. That led me from the San Francisco Bay Area to Seattle for a few years, and then to Switzerland for a few years, and eventually ended up in Saudi Arabia. And being a warm weather person, I like the warm people there. I like the warm climate there. I've been there 26 years. So I have a real appreciation for the people of the Middle East, especially the Saudis. I've read the Quran. I've read a lot of the statements, what they call the hadith of the prophet, his statements. I have a real good appreciation for their culture and appreciate the people there. But I've been there 26 years, and during that time, you know, it's a fairly boring place. There's when I first went there, very few restaurants, no cinemas, though they're talking about opening up cinemas, certainly no dances or anything like that. So a boring country like that, and you have a bunch of LDS members over there who have time on their hands, four-wheel drives. We got to get out in the desert. When you get out in the desert, you find a lot of incredible things. Now, we all believe that the Book of Mormon is true because we've read the book, we've prayed about it, we have a spiritual witness of it. So once we realize that the Book of Mormon, at least the first about 20% of it took place in Arabia, we thought, let's go out and see what we can find because we know its truth was going to be there. And when you actually then go out and look for Lehi's trail, it becomes pretty obvious where it is. So much of the work I've done over there has been not my work, but a group of LDS who followed George out into the desert on his wild adventures. And even more recently, a lot of Saudis have joined me. Non-Mormons have gone out there. And it's really kind of an interesting experience being in the desert, having a campfire at night, wondering which wadi would Lehi have gone down to, and my non-member American sitting there having his homemade wine and his cigar, and my Muslim friends arguing about which wadi they would have gone down. But to them as well, it's very obvious that the Book of Mormon's true. In fact, my Saudi friend will tell you, you know, when he first got a Book of Mormon in English, he said, oh, this is very dry book. This is very boring. And then he got a hold of one in Arabic. And he said, this is beautiful in Arabic. And he'll tell you, the original language of the Book of Mormon is not English. That's why it's kind of rough. But he says in Arabic, it's beautiful. That's its original language. Wow. He's totally convinced of that.
Wow.
That's so that's some things you pick up when you're there that you wouldn't normally get.
Mm-hmm. Well, great. So were you a CPA in Saudi Arabia then? Is that right?
No, I started out with the company KPMG, used to be Pete Marwick, as a CPA, one of the big four companies. Mm-hmm. And then I got involved in education. I wanted to teach. I was teaching at night at different universities around the United States. And I was given the opportunity to go and be a leadership coach and leadership development expert for the power company in Saudi Arabia. And that's what I've been doing for 26 years. And it's been really rewarding. Great people I've worked with. You know, it's just hard to imagine a workplace where in 26 years you've never heard one swear word. Everybody's very courteous to each other. Now there's a lot of lazy managers over there, and a lot of them will they'll say, George, tell me about my leadership skills. I'll say, you are horrible. You are terrible. You know, you need to just start all over again, develop your leadership from the basics. And they'll say, oh, well, will you help me? And I say, of course I will. And so I teach them, and then they don't pay any attention to me. And so 5 years later, I'm teaching the same people the same principles. But they're really a great people. I love being there, and it's been very rewarding helping them change their culture and to develop, become more a part of the 21st century than the, let's say, the 6th century when Muhammad was alive.
Wow.
They haven't changed a lot. Yeah.
So that's what your main job out there is, to be just kind of a leadership coach? Is
that leadership coach to the vice presidents, executive directors of the company. And it's very rewarding. Do some teaching as well. But it's really good. You know, I found it very interesting. When I first went to Saudi Arabia, the very first thing I did was to read the Old Testament again. Because in the context of that culture, you're talking about patriarchal society where there's polygamy, there's Bedouins, there's tribalism. The Old Testament comes alive. You can see how it was really written in the context of the Middle East. And so it becomes more meaningful to you. So when Abraham was a Bedouin, yeah, he was a Bedouin, all right. And he had sheep and he had camels and the whole works.
Oh, wow. So you just come home like twice a year then and spend most of your time in Saudi Arabia? Is that pretty much what happens?
Pretty much. Last 26 years, we'll come home for Christmas and we'll come home for the summertime, a break in the summertime. Uh-huh. And that's it.
Yeah.
So get out of the heat in the summertime.
It's been hard to get a hold of.
And then come here and freeze in the wintertime. So, because we enjoy Utah now as a second home.
Well, great. Well, so, you know, one of the things that I really find interesting is, and I guess in talking with you earlier, I love the Exodus. And there's a movie, I think it's called it's by the Discovery Media Group called The Exodus. It's either Revealed or The Exodus Decoded. I think it's The Exodus Revealed. And they talked a little bit about the real Mount Sinai is actually in Saudi Arabia. And as I understand it, that's one of your beliefs. Is that correct?
It's one of the things that we think we've been able to clarify. We have a better candidate for Mount Sinai than the traditional Mount Catherine's in the Sinai Peninsula. If you open up your Bible maps from the English version of King James, published by the LDS Church, you go to the maps in the back, and you clearly see that Midian was not located in the Sinai Peninsula. Jethro lived in Arabia, okay? And there's even today on maps in Arabia, you see the town of Ugaib, which is translated as Jethro in English. So Jethro lived in Arabia. When Moses fled Egypt, he went to Jethro's, and that was in Arabia. And he was tending his sheep on the backside of the wilderness, it says. So in other words, he was probably on the backside or the interside of the mountains that run through Midian. That's where he was herding Jethro's sheep at the time, and that's where we believe Mount Sinai is found. you know, for him to have been in Jethro's town, Midian, which is still there, the ruins of Midian, to have been in the Sinai Peninsula, he would have been a very lost shepherd, believe me, okay? And when you get over there to where Mount St. Catherine's is anyway, there's no evidence whatsoever that that place was ever Mount Sinai. There's no fodder for sheep. There's no artifacts that have been left there. The only reason that was ever claimed to be Mount Sinai was that Constantine's mother went down there with some kind of a guru at the time, and they said, oh, this must be Mount Sinai. But there's no evidence archaeologically that that was ever Mount Sinai.
So I know from the video that I saw, I believe they called it Jebel Musa, or the Mount of Mountain of Moses or something like that. Mm-hmm. And they said that there were some inscriptions of, I want to say Apis bull. Is that what the golden calf it was? We talk about the story of Exodus. I know there was an Egyptian cult that worshipped the cow, and in the story it talks a little bit about the golden calf and that sort of a thing. And so there are some inscriptions on this Jebel Musa that seem to show this. I want to say Apis bull. I think that's correct. Is that something you've seen, and are you familiar with that?
Well, we probably have the best film of any group about this new theory of Mount Sinai, this new candidate for Mount Sinai. And the reason for that is that we would go there during Ramadan and Hajj Eids. These are holidays, religious holidays that they have in Arabia. And we would be there. They're week-long vacations, basically, holidays for Christians. Muslims need to do either their family thing, their fasting, or they need to go to Mecca and do their Hajj, their pilgrimage. So we would be doing our archaeological research during the time they're doing their pilgrimage. So normally the site that we believe is Mount Sinai is fenced off and guarded. But during the pilgrimage, ain't nobody there. And so we're able to go through. And more recently, I've been able to go through with permission from my Saudi friends who get me in to the area. So we're able to go in and film, and nobody else has really had that access.
Yeah, I know.
So I have hours of film about Mount Sinai.
In that movie, they said it was all fenced off and it was closed. So that I'm going to have to get a copy of that film.
Well, the actual, what you're looking at here in Mount Sinai, when you talk about the altar of the golden calf, they call it, that is outside the fence, actually.
Oh, it is? Okay.
Yeah.
So, I did see that. Okay.
Yeah, to give your followers a little bit of a background as to how we came across what is believed to be the Valley of Lemuel. And if you look at any church publication now about the Book of Mormon and Lehi's Trail, they're following the photographs of us, or they're making pictures of what we believe to be the Valley of Lemuel. But how do we find that? It takes us back to Mount Sinai. When I got there, I found out that there had been a group of four different LDS parties who predated me, had gone looking for Mount Sinai. And you got to understand that there's a mountain range that runs down the entire length of Arabia, the western side of Arabia. And there's tens of thousands of mountains there. So how do you find Mount Sinai when there's all these mountains? It's like the Rocky Mountain Range or the Sierra Nevada. I mean, which one is Mount Sinai? It seems kind of crazy. So I was there. I had a four-wheel drive, and two of the members of the group who had gone out four times before looking for Mount Sinai and never found it encouraged me to please come with us, but bring your four-wheel drive and let's go look for Mount Sinai. And I bluntly told them, look, you guys are crazy. The instructions you have are almost impossible to follow. If we don't find Mount, I'll give you one day to find Mount Sinai in the area you think it is. Then we're going to go visit Petra in Jordan, because I know where Petra is. It's on a map. And we're going to go there and see Petra, because I want to see that. This real Mount Sinai, you'll never find it. So I was kind of the pessimist of the group. So what happened was we went to the area. My friend who was in stake presidency, Tom Culler, he said that he had a friend who knew some Bedouins, who knew where the Mount Musa was. So we met up with these Bedouins, and it's a long story. They treated us to a dinner. They had a feast. They wanted to offer me one of their daughters to marry. It was a crazy event.
You were single at the time.
I was single at the time. And so, anyway, I said, that's probably not going to work. But they were really gracious. But they took us to a mountain which was not Mount Sinai. It had none of the artifacts that were described in the book about this other Mount Sinai that was supposed to be there. So, anyway, that was gracious. But the next morning they convinced me, well, look, let's just go a little bit to the south. We were exploring down in that area south of what they call Mount Jabal al-Az. Let's go a little bit further south than where we were and just explore that area for a few hours, and then we'll go to Petra. So we traveled south of the mountain through these wadis.
Now, what's a wadi, by the way?
A wadi is a valley, okay, between the mountains. Though sometimes they use wadis in the language here because it's a Spanish version. A lot of the Spanish words from the West that we use today in the United States are Spanish. Spanish words are mixed with Arabic words because of the fact that the Muslims ruled Spain for 700 years. And so many of the things that are in the Spanish language are also Arabic words. Anyway, so what a wadi is, just a valley. So we're traveling down this wadi, and they said, here's where we ended our fourth expedition looking for Mount Sinai. And we're going beyond this. And we didn't go more than a mile until we actually came to the artifacts that were described as being from this candidate for Mount Sinai. The first one is a natural feature. It's maybe kind of a circular type of a little plateau, but the circumference is probably 200 feet in circumference. And on top of this feature, there is a sacrificial, we call it sacrificial, it's not an altar, but it's a place where they would have sacrificed animals. I kind of call it heathen. It's the same kind of feature you find actually at Petra of the Nabataeans. It's a basin, and then there's a little kind of canal where the blood would flow over into the rocks. So that's on top of this little natural feature. But all around it are petroglyphs of calves, Egyptian-type calves. And so that's become known as the golden calf altar there. If you go down, continue down the wadi, there's a mountain on the west, and maybe 50 to 100 yards from that mountain, you'll find 11 different piles of stones with holes in them that you would have put maybe a banner in, a flagpole or something. And they separate basically the main area of the wadi, the valley, where people would have camped. And then you have these 11 different pole markers. They stretch maybe a mile and a half down. And those, we believe, are the border markers that Moses was told to separate the people from actually Mount Sinai, so they didn't wander onto the mountain.
Okay,
so they're the border markers. They're still there. Then if you can get through the antiquity fence, you'll find that there's what they call the altar of Moses, which is kind of a L-shaped feature. It's maybe 100 feet long. You go in one end, and then there's kind of like a big altar stone, and then you go out the other column. These kind of like walls are about 2 feet high that define an alleyway up to the stone, and then the same thing leaving it. And then a real curious feature is that there's these limestone pieces of a columns that have been broken up broken apart. So you have these marble columns that are sitting there in the middle of nowhere. I mean, when we first went there, there was no buildings of any nature, no cities within 70 miles of that place. It's complete wilderness. And here you have marble columns, you have these other features that are there. We hiked up to a cave just above the altar on the mountain there that's referred to as the Cave of Elijah. And you can look out there and see just all sorts of vegetation and fodder that could have supported 600,000 people and their animals. There's a stream there, or water that's there, it comes out of spring. So there's a source of water. So you have an area that could work.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with George Potter. In our next conversation, we'll follow the trail of Moses, and George makes a very interesting claim. Nephi went to Mount Sinai.
I don't know that, but I mean, why not? You know, it makes sense.
That's cool.
That he went to Mount Sinai.
Thank you so much for listening. Make sure that you like our page on Facebook.com/GospelTangents. You can subscribe at YouTube at YouTube.com/GospelTangents. We're also on Twitter at GospelTangents, as well as make sure that you subscribe on iTunes so you don't miss any of our episodes. Thanks again for listening. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here you'll see some more of our videos. Thanks again.